I'm Alicia Menendez, and today for Leonard Lopate, you are listening to WNYC and WNYC.org. Callie Williams-Yost says that we shouldn't try to balance work and life because that's bound to fail. Instead, we should be focusing on small daily changes that will enable us to spend more time doing the things that are really important to us and that will enrich our lives. She writes about how to do this in her new book, Tweak It. It's published by Center Street, and I'm pleased that it brings her to our show today. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Alicia.
Now, I also want to let our listeners know that we'll be taking calls later this hour. You can call us at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-9692. All right, work-life balance. This is supposed to be the whole thing. Why doesn't that work?
Well, Alicia, there really is no work-life balance, and I think... That's one of the key steps we have to all take, which is to stop trying to find balance or that magical 50-50 split between our work and our life, and really just understand that we have to just manage our unique work-life fit day-to-day and at major life transitions. And that's what I'm trying to help people do in the book Tweak It, is to give them a framework, such a simple common sense framework to make that everyday work-life fit happen.
It seems that some workplaces, and I've worked in both workplaces, allow flexibility for childcare responsibility, but not, say, for taking an elderly parent to the doctor. There does seem to be this hyper focus on child rearing and not this greater sense of just care.
Well, you know, I think that goes back to what I call in the book, the seven truths of work and life in a modern world. I mean, really, it's about all of us. Yes, having a child, I'm a mother, I have children, becoming a parent is a big transition, and it is not always easy to manage the two, work and having kids. But it's just as hard to take care of an aging parent. It's just as hard if you're a single person and you have to meet the plumber and nobody else is there to do it but you, go back to school. Everybody has a work-life fit they have to manage.
I think we all know how our always-on technology has allowed work to intrude on personal time, getting emails in the middle of dinner. But are there ways it helps with flexibility?
Well, you know, it's really this great double-edged sword, right? So the wonderful flexibility it gives us to work anywhere, anytime is a gift. So we can be creative in how, when, and where we get our job done. But on the other side of that is if we don't control it, if we don't make technology do what we want it to do, it will consume us. And that is what's happening. Even just 10 or 15 years ago, there were clocks and there were walls that told us where work ended and life began. And those clocks and walls don't tell us that anymore. And that's why we need this new way of putting those boundaries up ourselves.
Is there a reason you think that more businesses are not taking advantage of telecommuting?
I think what's happening, well, actually, what's happening is more businesses are, but it's happening by default and not strategically, which is really where we have to go. The next step is organizations and individuals have to say, okay, this new flexible way of working, how are we going to harness that and make it achieve what we want it to achieve? So it's happening. It's kind of happening, whether they like it or not. It's just it's not being deliberate and it's not targeted.
I've noticed that there is a generational schism on telecommuting. That, you know, my older bosses very often sort of don't believe that if you are at home, that you can be as productive on your computer with your BlackBerry, with your iPhone, as you can be when you were seated in front of them and they can see you. Do you notice that?
You know, it's funny. I think the work life really is one of those generational divides in the workplace. And I'm going to use a very arbitrary number because there are plenty of people over this age that are very comfortable with flexibility. But let's just say, give it a general norm, is people under 30, it's almost so part of your DNA, you can't even quite have the conversation about why you can't do it because you just don't understand why you couldn't. And then people, let's say, over 40, it's sort of foreign to not come into an office every day and not be seen and to not be available or present does give the impression that you might not be working. So I think as an organization, as a workplace, as teams, as individuals, we have to do a better job of coming together and coming up with very more comfortable win-win solutions where we give each other pilots, like say, okay, let me try and see if you think I'm not getting my job done. And over time, you'll find a comfort level does develop.
Because it's not just good for the employee. It's good for the employer. It makes good business sense.
Telework, flexible hours, all the different flexible ways of working, the business case for a strategic approach to work flexibility. I'm not saying just a random approach, a strategic approach to work flexibility. The business case is so solid that if an organization is not doing it, they're leaving so much money on the table. And hopefully we're going to see over the next 5 to 10 years, organizations really waking up and saying it has to be a major part of the way we operate our business.
Do you think that the economic downturn makes companies more open to these types of changes or less?
I think that the smart companies have actually found that it helps them save money. I think there are organizations that are finding they don't have to have as much real estate if they allow a combination of open workspaces and telecommuting. I think they've found that they save money in terms of less turnover. They're able to be creative with how they hire people. And I think they will be better positioned, or I know they'll be better positioned when the economy begins to really accelerate to take advantage of that and actually hire the best and the brightest, because the best and the brightest, they want this.
How are these issues then affecting America's competitiveness? Are other countries doing this? Are other countries ahead of us on this?
You know, it's interesting. I think the difference is other countries, like let's say the UK, they have approached this from a public policy perspective, not necessarily an organizational change perspective within businesses. And I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way to do it. I'm hesitant to see that the policy-based approach to flexible work is always going to be as effective, only because I don't think the organizational change piece happens, and individuals, like what I'm trying to do with Tweak It, individuals aren't really forced to then say, what do I need to do? What's my part in this partnership? Because an organization can give you flexibility, but now our job as individuals is to learn how to reach out, grab it, and then harness it and take it where we want it to go, personally and professionally.
I'm Alicia Menendez in today for Leonard Lopate. I'm speaking with Kelly Williams-Yost about her book, Tweak It, Make What Matters to You Happen Every Day. It's published by Center Street. You're listening to WNYC and WNYC.org. You know, you write in the book about work-life fit naturals, these people who just get it. Who are they?
Well, you know, it's funny, Alicia, when I would go into companies, people would always say, oh, you should talk to Donna. She's got 4 kids. She runs a not-for-profit on the side. She's a triathlete. Yeah. I don't know how she does it. Or people would sort of slink up to me after a presentation and say, don't be offended, but I don't really understand what the big deal is. And I'd always have my radar up, like, okay, this is a work-life fit natural. They really have just naturally figured this out. And they don't realize that the rest of us just don't know. And I estimate they're about 10 to 15% of the population. So in other words, 85% of us really don't intuitively understand what they get. And they've just figured out how to fit it all together. And we have a lot to learn from them. And I translate their secrets in the book into the Tweak It practice.
Well, what have they taught you?
Well, they have taught me that they know they have to actively and deliberately manage their work-life fit. They just understand that it's their job. And what they do is they keep their work and their personal calendar and to-do list in one place. They don't run a work calendar and a personal calendar. So they're always making choices based on a complete picture. They check in with themselves regularly. So they ask themselves, what do I want? What's missing? What do I want less of? What do I want more of in my work and my life? And then they make small changes to close the gap. And it's amazing how just, okay, if I'm not, didn't have enough time with my partner, let me schedule a dinner with them. If I haven't gotten my hair cut, I need to get my hair cut. And they just sort of intuitively work these small little micro adjustments or tweaks in an active, deliberate way to make what matters to them happen. And those are the secrets that make up the Tweak It practice.
I want to take this call we have coming in from Colin in Jackson Heights. Colin, what's your question? Colin, can you hear us? All right, we will come back to Colin. So how can we adopt their ways? I mean, they're these people, they get it. How do we follow their lead?
Well, Alicia, as I lay out in the book, I think first it is that we have to understand that work and life has radically transformed, and we have to understand why it is our role to be a partner with our employers to manage our work-life fit. Then we do have to, again, change our language, start to see it as work-life fit. There's no right answer. There's no, you know, we're not wrong if we do it some way that's not like somebody else, because we're all different. And then sit down. Really, you know, get your calendars together. Put your work and your personal calendar in one place. You don't have to have it in the same Outlook URL, but, you know, have a Google Calendar and your Outlook open at the same time. So when somebody sends a meeting request and you have yoga class on your calendar, you're not just naturally blowing off yoga class. You might decide not to go, but you're going to make a deliberate choice. And then check in with yourself on a weekly basis. Sit down. It takes 30 minutes and just look at your calendar, look at your what I call your tweak it snapshot, see what's not happening that you would like to add in. And if you're really busy one week, just do a couple small things. You're going to see such a difference. If you just, you know, moved your body, you know, maybe balanced your checkbook, had a coffee with your friend, you know, you'd feel much better about how your work and your life are fitting together. And make those small changes. Over time, you will build a foundation of well-being and order we all crave and just seem to be unable to find.
I think we have Colin from Jackson Heights on the line. Hi, Colin.
Hi there.
You have a comment you wanted to add.
Well, I was just curious about the ease of bringing your personal life into work, how much that affects people's productivity at work.
Colin, thank you for that question. Actually, the research is very strong on this point. And when you say bring your personal life into work, you're not necessarily telling everybody what you're doing, but what you're getting is the flexibility to make the shifts in how, when, and where you're working based on what you have to achieve at a certain time. And what the research has consistently shown is that people who have that flexibility to manage their work-life fit in a way that works for you, but also your job, so you're thinking of your job at the same time, really are much more engaged. They're more productive. There's less absenteeism. So truly, if it's done well and done correctly so that the organization understands their role and we as individuals understand ours, truly the payoff is remarkable.
All right, Colin, I want to thank you for that call. Thank you so much. So how is our judgment of ourselves and others getting in the way? You know, we always hear you give paternal leave, and men don't want to take it because there's a culture around them where we don't accept, yes, it's important for you to be with your child.
Well, you know, Alicia, it's interesting. Actually, men are reporting higher levels of work-life conflict than women are. And working dads have the highest level of work-life conflict. And I'm hoping that what ultimately this book does, it changes the conversation away from, it's just mothers and women. It's dads. It's men and women caring for aging parents. That's really, in my opinion, the issue that's going to blow this wide open, because this is a startling statistic. Today, there are 5.1 people between the ages of 16 and 64 available to take care of each person over 65. In 2050, that is going to go down to 2.9 people for every one person over 65. That's unbelievable. That means that most of all working people at some point are going to have to take care of one, two, maybe three aging adults in an environment where we're talking about less government support. So that is going to fall to the workplace to offer the flexibility and the supports to manage what's going to be a very overwhelming responsibility for a lot of people.
I know. I think about that all the time, having my dad in my basement and my partner's mother and father. And how are you going to take care of all these people?
It's a conversation we need to be having. And as I say, people say to me, well, what if companies really don't have to do this? And I think, honestly, if in 10 years an organization is not offering this type of flexibility, I'm not sure how it's going to be able to stay in business with all of these issues coming down the pike. I just think it's going to become a norm, and it's got to be part of the way your organization operates.
So, you know, as you know better than anyone, everyone seems so overwhelmed these days. Where do we start?
Okay. So, Alicia, this is why I love this practice. It breaks it down and makes it easy to get started. It's not overwhelming. In fact, it's so easy. It's common sense. But what you're going to want to do is set aside 30 minutes once a week, sit down, use the framework and the worksheets and the process to guide you, ask yourself, create your calendar with your work and personal to-dos in one place, see what's missing, see what you want. Ask yourself what small steps you'd want to take. There's inspiration in the book. I interviewed 50 experts from 50 different career and personal life areas, and they gave their best get started tips. So go to the book at the back and get inspiration. They're awesome. I even created the Tweak It Together website, so you can go and fill out your mobile Tweak It tracker and get more inspiration and just start putting these small steps in place, because each small step you take, you're going to get more comfortable, putting a boundary up, and you're going to see it makes you better. You're bringing more of yourself to the workplace. I think we're so afraid of making a wrong step that it's going to put our job in jeopardy that we actually hurt ourselves in that we don't get enough sleep, we don't take care of ourselves, we don't nurture our relationships, and then we're bringing less of ourselves to the table. So we've got to start doing what matters to us, and that will actually benefit us at work and in our personal lives.
And what then will the payoffs be?
Well, I mean, I think the payoffs, let's say that you focus on your personal finances, you move your body, you connect with your family, you reconnect with a hobby that mattered to you, you take a class and you learn, and even just download a podcast and listen to it while you're walking and you learn a new skill. All of those things together are going to make you feel like you have a foundation under you, a foundation of well-being in order that lets you just, you know, do your best on your job, but then also have a fulfilling personal life and full of connection and creativity. The payoff will be tremendous.
You know, there are good employers and there are bad employers. There are employers who are really not even behind the idea of work-life fit. They just want you to work. When do you know the difference? When do you know when it's about you and when it's about your employer?
Well, I think if assuming that 85% of us don't really know what we need to do, just because if you think about it, 10 to 15 years ago, we didn't need to actually actively manage our work-life fit. So this is a new modern skill set that we all need to have. So I would say for the most part, all of us could really do a better job. And in fact, it's funny, people would push back on me and say, but I do this. So I, over a 6-month period, I had 242 people fill out a brief survey to see if they did all the steps. And at the end, I found that only 15% of the 242 do the 4 steps. So we really don't even follow this simple framework. So most of us probably could do a better job. So that I would say is the percentage there. But in terms of your employer, I still think we have the power to make small changes, even if we work for an employer that is not on the page yet. But again, more and more employers are starting to get there. And actually, sometimes it takes just one person raising their hand and saying, you know what, I just like to try to do things a little differently. And then a manager gets comfortable with it. They see the payoff and then change starts to happen. It doesn't always have to start from the top. So, you know, take your little piece of the grass where you are, where your life, your work-life fit, and just start making some changes yourself. And you may see that you inspire your team. Create a tweak it support team in your group and just work together and cover for each other and collaborate and communicate with each other. And then start to show the rest of your workplace like, wow, they're getting more done. They're not getting sick as much. Everybody seems to be, you know, more creative and innovative. And wow, what are you guys doing? And then it starts to spread from there.
I'm speaking with Callie Williams-Yost about her book, Tweak It, Make What Matters to You Happen Every Day. It's published by Center Street, and it will have more. And we'll be taking your calls to 212-433-9692 after a break. On the next Fresh Air, Terry Gross talks with award-winning writer Barry Lopez about his article in this month's editions of Harper's, where he writes about the 4 years he was sexually abused by a predatory pedophile while growing up in California. Tune in today at 2 on 92.9 FM WNYC. And AM 820 will be going off the air starting at 2 p.m. today in order to perform necessary repairs to our transmitter as a result of extensive damage incurred during Hurricane Sandy. We anticipate the work is going to take about an hour, and we expect to be back on air by 3 p.m. And you can listen to AM 820 via the live stream on the website WNYC.org. I'm Alicia Menendez of HuffPost Live. In today for Leonard Lopate, this is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC support comes from the Newark Museum, featuring the exhibition Angels and Tomboys, Girlhood in 19th Century American Art. Now through January 20th, artists' works on view include John Singer Sargent, Thomas Eakins, Winslow Homer, and others. More at newarkmuseum.org. The Charles H. Revson Foundation, because a great city needs an informed and engaged public. Learn more at revsonfoundation.org. New York Public Radio's Community Advisory Board wants your feedback. Come to a public meeting to share your thoughts about WNYC. Monday, January 14th at 7 at the Green Space, 44 Charlton Street. Details at 646-829-4000 or WNYC.org.
On the next Brian Lehrer Show, 25 years of muckraking. Daily News columnist Juan Gonzalez revisits some of his biggest investigative scoops, from police brutality in Crown Heights to the CityTime payroll scandal worth $500 million. Also, Vivek Bald on early immigrants from India who got by as racially ambiguous. His book is called Bengali Harlem. The Brian Lehrer Show, weekdays at 10 a.m. on WNYC.
I'm Alicia Menendez of HuffPost Live, and today for Leonard Lopate, our guest is Callie Williams-Yost. She is the author of Tweak It. You are listening to WNYC and WNYC.org. You know, Callie, I feel like a lot of us have sort of grappled with this notion of saying no to work things and to commitments that we don't want to do. But how do you learn to say no to some of even the fun stuff? I mean, there are not only demands on our work life, but also demands on our personal life. Friends who want to have dinner, get drinks, do this, do that. And sometimes we have to learn to say no to those things, too.
You know, Alicia, that's a really good point. And sometimes we focus so much on how do you say no at work that we don't really focus on the other side of the equation. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to we seem to run our work and life as these two separate entities, and they're really not anymore. It's really part of a whole picture. So as you're looking at your Tweak It snapshot, you're also going to find that you're going to maybe have to say, I can't maybe meet you tonight for dinner, but I'd love to meet you next week. And, you know, maybe if you went out, you wouldn't get to sleep enough sleep and you haven't gotten enough sleep. Or if you went out, you wouldn't make it to the grocery store and you need to get to the grocery store so you have a healthy meal. Or maybe you'd signed up for a class and you want to take an online tutorial and something. And if you went out to dinner, you would miss that. So you really do have to look again at your whole picture and make those deliberate conscious choices, whether it's conscious choices about your work or whether it's conscious choices about your life.
Gideon from the Bronx asks, what about people who work in retail, the people who work in non-office jobs? I mean, what about someone who works at McDonald's? How do they establish work-life balance?
Well, even then, I'm going to say even more. You can't think of it as work-life balance. You have to think of it.
Do you see that?
I know.
It's the entire time. I've been so good.
I know. It's okay. It's funny because the language shift really, really matters. It gets you to think about the possibilities versus what you don't have, because you're never going to have balance. So you keep thinking about, oh, the balance I don't have versus what's the work-life fit I could have based on my unique circumstances. So somebody who works in retail, you're going to have potentially a variable schedule. And even more so, you have to think about deliberately how you're going to fit that all together so that you get done what you want to get done with a varied schedule. In fact, in the book, I purposefully talk about a gentleman who works a rotating shift schedule in a manufacturing environment and how he manages his work-life fit with the Tweak It practice. So you might find that interesting. And, you know, sometimes that flexibility that would come from a real retail job can allow you to get a lot of other things done if you manage it.
And how do you do this in your own life?
In my own life?
Because it's very easy to tell everyone
Absolutely.
Else about fitting their work and life together.
You know, I actually began to learn a lot from the Work-Life Fit Naturals when I started to research them about 6 years ago, as I became aware that people didn't have the everyday work-life fit, their everyday work-life fit down. So how do I manage my everyday work-life fit? Well, I do follow the practice, and I'm a mom. I have two kids. I run my own business. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm married. I have a husband. And
that is a full plate,
I'll tell you. And I really sit down. Every Sunday is my day. And I have standard tweaks. I talk about this in the book. I have standard tweaks. So the small actions and priorities that I need to do on an ongoing basis every week. And then every week I build in my unique tweaks as my time allows. And so for me, for example, with my standard tweaks, I have to what I call move my body 4 or 5 times a week. Now, I leave that really open so I don't box myself into what type of movement that is. So if it's I walk my dog, if I get to the gym, if, you know, I just stand up while I'm talking on the phone to a client, that to me is movement. Then I also like to sit down again 4 or 5 times a week and write in my journal and just meditate for 20 minutes a day. Nothing major, just be quiet. And I like to get my grocery shopping done on Sundays and all my meals planned. So if and 10 minutes a day of focus time with my kids and my husband. And if I have all those things happening, again, 70% of the time, that's my goal. I am not a perfectionist. And that's one of the other lessons I learned from the Naturals, is that you're never going to be perfect. We are never going to do this exactly right. So if I hit 70% of my tweaks for the week, I'm good. And then if I want to build in something else for that week and my schedule allows it, I may plan a trip or I may see a friend. Whatever piece of my life is not happening that I want to make happen, I'll take a small action.
So let's look at some specific examples. Okay. What if you want to have dinner with your family 3 times a week?
Okay. So if you follow the Tweak It practice, what you would do is you would have sat down, you looked at your Tweak It snapshot, you see, you know what? I've really not made it home in time to have a nice dinner with everybody sitting down. How can I make that work? You look at your schedule, you see, you know, I probably could get home in time Monday night and Thursday night, and we'll try to do something one night on the weekend. So you set that out. Then who do you have to communicate with and collaborate with to make that happen? So you tell your team, hey, listen, I'm going to try to get out of here by this time on Monday night and Wednesday night. And I'm available if you need me afterwards. This is how I'm going to get things done. And then you let your family know, hey, everybody, because I know I have teens. Hey, everybody, this is what we're doing on Monday night and Wednesday night.
So you don't propose it as an option?
No, I just, you know, you say, hey, let's try to make this all work. And then naturally, maybe things come up. Maybe a last minute client project has to happen on Monday night and you might have to stay later. But the point is, you're going to make a choice. It's not that you've written it down in your calendar, family dinner that night, you're going to try to leave, you've told everybody what your plan is, you don't have to say it, I'm leaving because I'm trying to have dinner with my family, just say I'm trying to get out of here at this time. So you're going to make a choice. You may decide to stay and finish that project. But my experience is there are very few projects that are so deeply emergency that you couldn't maybe do it a little bit later. So
we've got a great question coming in from David in Queens. Hey, David.
Hi. My question is simple. You come to a place of work and you begin to make slight changes and things begin to move well, and your boss seems to be threatened by those changes because it comes from you and you are not the boss, and he begins to, or she begins to, cancel those meetings that you cannot express your thoughts or the changes that you want to put in the place of work. Is there any place to be aware of that before you start making those changes?
That's a great question. Well, if you start very, very small, chances are they might not even really notice that you're making a big change. If you just leave 15 minutes earlier to go to the gym, or you take a slightly longer lunch, they might not even notice that. But the best thing to do is to sit down with your boss and explain what you're trying to do and explain how you think it's going to benefit the business, and put in place a pilot and get them on board in terms of, okay, this is a pilot. We're just going to try this for a month, 2 months, and then bring them into the success. Talk to them. If they're uncomfortable, ask them why they're uncomfortable, and then make adjustments so that perhaps you can address an issue that they had. But over time, that gives them an out. Then they see that this doesn't have to go on forever. And if there's a success, then let them feel like they had a role in making that successful. So start small, pilot it, say we don't have to do this forever, and just see how it goes, and then take it from there.
And your book touches on this in some chapters. You have a chapter on it, or
you know what? In the book,
it's called Difficult Bosses.
Yeah. You know what? It's I talk about how to collaborate and communicate, and you know, get the team involved.
All right,
good.
David.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So let's talk about another example. How about if you decide you want to move your body more this week?
Okay, so same steps. So you sit down, you look at your Tweak It practice, you say to your Tweak It snapshot, and you say, okay, when would I have time to maybe go to the gym, maybe take a walk with my friend, and put that down on your calendar. You say, okay, maybe I can go to yoga class on Tuesday morning, and I can go take a walk with my friend at lunch. We'll go on a lunch walk Wednesday and Thursday. And then who do I have to communicate and collaborate with to make that happen? Well, I have to go to bed earlier on Monday because I have to get up early on Tuesday. I have to put sneakers in my bag for Wednesday and Thursday. I have to make sure I block that off on my calendar so nobody makes a meeting request during the day so that I can take that lunch walk. And, you know, then you just make it happen. And again, there could be things that come up that...
Let's talk about that, though, that magic, that make it happen moment. Because
yes.
I think people can buy your book and they can follow your book and it is so clear. And then that's in some ways the make or break moment.
Right.
You either do it or you don't.
That's right. And that's where if you put it down and you see it there and you're not running these two different parts of your world separately, then you got to decide. And you really do have to decide what is important to you and see the benefit of getting up and going to that yoga class, because I think we focus too much on time. And what we fail to realize is that the energy return that you're going to get from that yoga class is going to be way more than the time that you invested. And you have to begin to see the payoff, because again, when do we change? We change when that we see that the payoff is greater than the effort that we have to make. And we have to begin to see that when we take care of ourselves and when we build these things in, we are better, we are smarter, we are stronger, and all parts of our lives work better.
I'm Alicia Menendez, and today for Leonard Lopate, I'm talking with Callie Williams-Yost about her new book, Tweak It. It is published by Center Street. You are listening to WNYC and WNYC.org. All right, we've focused on employees. Let's move to employers. Employers, please listen. Let's say you have this scenario. Half of your new clients are in countries in different time zones. How do you service those clients without burning everyone out?
Oh, Alicia, this is becoming a bigger, bigger issue in so many businesses as our business becomes more global. And unless we are deliberate about how we let people flexibly manage their hours to cover clients, what happens is people end up working 24 hours a day, which is just not sustainable. So what organizations need to do is they need to, again, encourage people to understand what their work-life fit reality is and come to the table with a coordination of schedules. So, for example, if the team has to cover clients in Asia, then maybe one or two nights a week, everybody picks a night to cover and everybody else can be off, so that we're not all responding all the time to every issue that comes up. And also, if you're on the phone at night with a project with a client in another country, another time zone, make it known that it is okay for you to shift your hours to come in a little bit later and have that be a norm in your group that makes that okay. And again, empower people, because as a manager, this is the thing we have to learn. Managers cannot tell us when we need to shift our hours and shift when we work, because they don't know how we prefer to work. They obviously don't know maybe what we're even doing. So it's too much pressure to put that on a manager. And that's why they don't like it sometimes, because it just gets really uncomfortable for them. That's why it's important for us to know the skill set to come to the table with a plan. And that's what the Tweak It practice tries to do, is you are looking at your whole picture and understanding how you have to make shifts and coming to the table prepared.
Sandy, I think you saw sort of which businesses had plans for disaster response and which didn't. How do you stay up and running during bad weather?
You know, this was fascinating, Alicia. I'm from New Jersey. And
Best in the world.
There you go. It was interesting to watch this in action, because in my town, we were pretty hard hit. And I watched three different groups of people. I watched the people who had a tremendous amount of flexibility just be able to work, even without electricity. They'd work in their car. They'd be able to still be productive. They'd go down to the police station where they had a warming station and everybody be plugged in and working, right? But they were productive. They were able to get their jobs done to a certain degree. Then I had their group of people who sort of kind of thought they had flexibility, but really weren't quite sure. So they sort of tried to work flexibly, but then they'd try to get into the city, which was ridiculous because the traffic was crazy. The transportation didn't work. There were literally 3 mile long gas lines for people that they were waiting in. And it was such a waste of their time. And then there were the people who just didn't even think they had any solution. And they just would slog in every day only to turn around and have to figure out how to get home again. They weren't getting anything done. And I thought it's the companies.
They were looking like martyrs. They were getting that done.
Exactly. And they could say, I went to work. But they weren't really working. They were just putting on the show. And I thought, wow, if every organization had this plan in place beforehand, like these few people who were working remotely, albeit not easily, but getting it done, they would at least have been productive. And they didn't have it in place. So employers really today need to understand that disaster preparedness is based on a strategic application of telework and hours that really does make a difference.
Well, I've been speaking with Callie Williams-Yost about how you can make your work life and your personal life fit together better. Her book is called Tweak It, Make What Matters to You Happen Every Day. It's published by Center Street. Callie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, Alicia, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be right back.